Today, the title here of the shiur is The Obsession with Confession. And being there many years of experience through Yom Kippur, I think it's incumbent upon us to really understand a little bit, why is there this obsession with confession? Why, in the davening of Yom Kippur, is the confession done, the vidui, done twice? One in the silent Shema Esrei and one in the Chazara Shatz, for a grand total of 10 times. Over the course of 24, 25 hours, we will be saying, confessing our sins, vidui, 10 times. The question is, you know, why is that? It's an interesting part of the tefillah. It's not necessarily the most favorite of most people. That it's not something that they really look forward to, confessing your sins. It's not something that's very comfortable. You know, if you have to pick your best, you know, the best part of davening in the Yom Kippur services, it would probably be the Mara Kohen, you know, where everybody's getting together and singing Mara Kohen. You know, it's very exciting. You read through the Avodah of the Beit HaMikdash, when the Kohen Gadol did all of the Avodah, finally finishing the Avodah, coming out and seeing the Kohen Gadol in all of his vestments and in all of his clothes, and finishing the Avodah. It's a beautiful sight. Mara Kohen, how beautiful the Kohen is. You know, by us, when I grew up in Lawrence, in the youngest of Lawrence Cedarhurst, it was particularly exciting, that part of Tefillah Mara Kohen. Why is that? Because it was a big joke. The Gabbai of the Shul, he was a Kohen, and his name, not joking, his name was Murray Cohn. So instead of saying Mara Kohen, you know, and singing the Mara Kohen, so it was always Murray Cohn. Murray Cohn. And it was very, you know, it was very exciting for him, it was very exciting for the Shul. They had the whole Yom Kippur davening revolving around Mr. Murray Cohn. But the clapping, the kapara part of it is not that exciting. Yet it's pretty much the, you know, in terms of, you know, if you play fantasy, you know, Yom Kippur davening, you know, it gets the most points because it's done the most times. So the question is why, and why is it in the tefillah davening? Why is it in the Shmoneh Esrei of Shacharis, of Musaf, and Ne'ilah? Why is it in that? Why is it just part of the regular davening? Why is it thrown in to the actual tefillah? If you had to look around in shul when people are clapping, what we call in Yiddish, right, beating their chest, you know, there are three different types of people out there. You have like the people that don't care at all; they're just not doing it. They're just like looking at their machzer, they're counting how many pages are left in the machzer, dividing by two when it's in the English translation, right? So they think that there's less time left. Doesn't really work. And then you have the crazy clappers. You have the really religious guys, you know, like boom, boom, like you could hear like three rows away, you could hear this guy beating his chest, you know, very, very loudly. You know, and then you have like the very casual clappers, you know, the guys that care about the day, realize that they should be more serious, and you know, you have the looking at it, but they also get tired after a while. You know, they're not that crazy clapper guy, and they get tired of it after a while. But I think the key to not getting tired of it is to understanding why is a part of the day. Why is it such a major focus? It's such a major focus of tshuva that the Rambam in the first halacha in Hilchos Tshuva speaks about it as basically the first step in tshuva. He says if a person wants to do tshuva, v'yashuv mechato, chayiv lehitvadot, he's chayiv to confess lifnei hakel baruch hu, in front of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Very poetic. The very first thing that comes in Hilchos Tshuva is that kapara. And where he says at the end, Kol Hamarbe Binyan Zeh Hareza Meshubach, like we say on Pesach, right? Kol Hamarbe L'Sapri B'Siyos Mitzrayim Hareza Meshubach. The Rambam says, Kol Hamarbe in the Vidui Hareza Meshubach. So we see it's something very, very serious and something very, very integral to the truth. The question is why? So how do we answer this question? If we go back in time to something we'll be reading in a very short while, you go back to the most, probably the biggest Avera, one of the first Averas in the history of the world, and probably the biggest, where Cain kills Hevel. Now, if we look at that story for a second, we can see what an Avera does to a person, and we can see how the tshuva process should work. So we all know the story. What we might not know are the two Averas that Cain got by killing Hevel. So one of them is that he was actually killed, right? He was killed by Lemech many, many, many years later in the forest. So that, as we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes Mida Keneged Mida. Okay, so he killed his brother, so he got killed. Makes a lot of sense. What doesn't make so much sense, and Rav Aaron Lapiansky says this, the Rosh Hashiva in Silver Spring, Maryland, he has a whole essay where I'm taking a few of the ideas from, beautiful essay that I'll give you if you want to read it afterwards. And he says as follows, the second punishment was by Cain, Na v'na tiyah ba'aretz, that you have to wander, you have to be a nomad, you have to wander the earth. Why is that? Why was that his punishment? Now, I understand Mida Keneged Mida, that he gets killed, but why is, what's the Mida Keneged Mida of having to traverse the earth because you killed? What's the connection? That's basically what Golos is. If you know, when you kill somebody, inadvertently you have to go to Golos. We have that Tzadikim used to go, the Vilna Gaon was famous, and the other Tzadikim were in Europe used to go traversing. Rav Elimelech and the gents would go from place to place. They would put himself in Golos. What is Golos? What is that about? Seems to be an integral part of the tshuva that Cain had to do, and we see that tzaddikim do it themselves as well. So if you look at an avera, there are two parts to an avera. There's a spiritual root wound that a person does, and the fact that they have to confess to that avera that they did. But nobody likes to confess. People like to rationalize away what they're doing, so they don't have to, they don't have to face the music. You know, you have examples of guys who, do things that they know are wrong because they want a safe face in front of their friends. You know, in my time, it used to be in high school, it was like a big thing that, are you going to be that loser to go wash for your bagel at the bagel store during lunch? You know, are you going to be that religious guy or not? And it was always something that was hard for me to, I was that religious guy very often, and it was like, oh, you're going to wash, okay, we'll wait for you, And it's a sort of peer pressure that person has. It's very easy to rationalize away why you're going to do an avera. If it's a parnasa, a person might say, I have to do this for my parnasa. Or, the greatest line I ever had from one of my guys in yeshiva was, Rabbi, let me just do my averas. What's the big deal? So I go to Gehenna, how long is Gehenna going to be for anyway? I might as well have my fun for a few good years and worry about that later. And people don't want to face the music, and that just makes it worse. Because a person goes and continues straying away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he never realizes or doesn't come to grips with what he's doing wrong. So Cain got two averus, two punishments. He was killed, and then he went into Golos. Why is Golos a kapara? Because Golos is a kapara because what Golos does is that it puts you, doesn't put you at ease, and if anything, you're never in a sense of clarity. You don't know what's going to be. You don't know where you're going to be the next night. Your entire being is totally unclear and totally at odds with what you normally, the normal day of life. And what the avera that Cain got is that since he couldn't come to grips with it as avera, he was in such turmoil. So his body had to be in turmoil. It was as if his body was going through exactly what his neshama, what his soul was going through. And since he could not crystallize the avera that he did, so he went to, it was in turmoil. Where do we see that he couldn't crystallize the avera that he did? Because what happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Cain and said, Cain, what'd you do? Where's your brother Hevel? So what does he respond that we all know? Anybody? I hope you all know here. What does Cain respond? Hashemerach Yanochi. Right? Am I my brother's keeper? And the Kli Yoker says on that what Cain was saying, what he said, as did I have to watch him? Let him protect himself. Is it my fault that I killed him? He should have protected himself. He should have taken what's that thing called? The defense course and been able to Krav Maga and defended himself from me. It's not my fault. That's a rationalization. It's crazy rationalization, but it's a rationalization nonetheless of not coming to grips with yourself, putting yourself in turmoil. So Memela, his Mida Keneged Mida, his punishment was that he had to be in turmoil, he had to be in Golos. Vidoy Kapara, saying, Ana Hashem, Chatasi, Avisi, Ashamti, Begati, saying all these things, gives a person a chance to realize what he's done, and to come to grips with what needs to be finished. And the Medrash tells us that when did Cain stop having to go traverse the land? stop being a nomad. The second he said, Gadol Avodim Minaso. The second that he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my sin is too big to bear. I need to do tshuva. So right then and there, his punishment stopped. Because the galus is all about coming to grips with what you have done wrong over the year and over your lifetime. And that's what the kapara process is. That's what vidui is all about. Vidui is all about understanding what you did wrong, and then the Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to turn right back to you. There's an interesting Gemara, crazy Gemara in Bava Basra and Gemara in Sanhedrin also. The guys last year might have learned it. Where Rabbi Bar Chana is going in the desert with an Arab guide, taking him through the desert. And all of a sudden they get to the spot where there's smoke coming out of the ground. And they hear the voice that is saying, Moshe emet v'torato emet v'hein badoin. Moshe is the truth, the Torah is the truth, and we are liars. And the voice the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Rachana tells us, is a voice of Korach v'Adato, Korach and his cohorts, who are continuously saying from Gehenim that Moshe emet v'torato emet v'hein badayim. Moshe is true, the Torah is true, and we are liars. They have to say this over and over and over again. Why? Because that's their kapara. Because kapara is all about recognizing what you did wrong, fessing up, and ultimately telling the truth. And once a person does that, he can connect back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a beautiful story that paints this beautiful picture. There's a big Rosh Hashiva of Berlin in Yerushalayim. This is in the time of the War of Independence, when all of Yerushalayim, and really all of Israel, the bread was rationed and meat was rationed. Everything was very, very, you couldn't find meat anywhere. Maybe once a month they were able to get meat, and bread was once a week, and even that they had to save. So there was a family who was particularly poor. Everybody was poor in that time, but there was a family that was particularly poor in Yerushalayim, and there was a family in America, a man in America, who took upon himself to help support this family. And he sent a letter to the family saying, you know, I'm coming for the Chagim, I want to come visit this family that I'm helping. The mother of the family had a lot of little kids, and she was excited to finally be able to say thank you in person to this man that was helping her survive through those tumultuous years. And he finally was coming, and she said, you know, I have to set up something very special for him. So she buys this crocheted tablecloth, and she goes and she saves the rations of meat that she had, and she puts it in the freezer, saving it for this day when this wealthy man is coming to visit. And it's 3 hours before this guy comes. She sets up everything. She doesn't allow any of her children into the dining room. Obviously, in Yerushalayim, an apartment, if you've ever been to mine, you know that it's not, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. You know, when you have your, it's not like in America where, you know, you could keep them out of the east wing and everybody could still be in the west wing. Right? It's not like that. But she tried to manage. She said, nobody's able to come into this room. No kids are able to come into this room. Everything's set up for when the man comes. And she had to go out for a moment, and her 8-year-old kid runs into the, wants to take a look at what's going on in the dining room. And he peeks up on his tippy toes to look at all of the food, and then looking at the beautiful tablecloth that's set. And he hears his mother coming back into the house, and he dashes out of that room. But as he's dashing out of that room, he doesn't realize that his tzitzis get caught on the tapestry of the tablecloth. And as he's running, he runs and he takes the whole tablecloth with him, and everything falls to the floor. All of the dishes break, all the food is gone, and this is already, you know, a half hour before the man is coming to visit. And the kid runs out of the house. He's running down the street. You can imagine, like in Gula, right? He's running down the streets, going back and forth, and the mother's running after him. She's saying, I'm going to kill you. She's running. She's about to grab onto him. This Rav Berlin is watching this sight, watching this going. And she's about to grab onto him. And as she's about to grab onto him, the kid turns around and starts crying. He says, Mommy, I'm sorry. And the mother, instead of going and slapping him, she takes him and she goes and she gives him a kiss. And Rav Berlin says that he thought about this for a moment, said that's exactly what Vidui is all about. If a person can take himself and say, I know I did something wrong, and I'm sorry for it. If he could fess up and not rationalize away his averos, then the Kadosh Baruch Hu is happy to give him a new year, is happy to continue that relationship. And that's exactly what the Kapara Vidui is all about. It's interesting to know, when you do the Ashamnu Bagadnu, right, we have Sararnu. What does Sararnu mean? If anybody learned Sanhedrin, right, Ben Sorer Umora means to be a wayward, to stray away from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Rav Galinsky, Zatzal, asks, how come it doesn't say Saranu Umararnim? Why doesn't it say Sorer Umore? What's Mora? Mora is to rationalize something. Sorer Umore. You strayed away and you rationalize. Like we say Mora Heter. You're Mora Heter to yourself. You rationalize. I'm able to eat this thing, even if it's a questionable kashrut, because I need to make my parents happy, whatever. That's called being rationalizing. So how come we don't clap for Mararnu? Why don't we just say Sararnu? Why don't we say Mararnu? We said Maradnu, but not Mararnu. So Rav Yaakov Galinsky has a beautiful shot, and based on what we're saying, it makes a lot of sense. Because what's Mora to rationalize? Once a person rationalizes, he's never going to come to the table. He's never going to come to do tshuva, because he's always rationalizing away what he's doing wrong. So he's not in the parsha. He's not in the game of tshuva yet. So you're not going to clap for that, because it's not something that you realize. If you strayed away, you're a sararnu, okay. If you stray away and we realize that we did something wrong, we can come back. But once you're at the point of always rationalizing, then you're never going to come back. That's one aspect of kapara, and that's why it's so integral to the day, to the point of the day. Second is, what does an avera do to us that we need to atone for it? So there are two things that the avera does. First of all, it creates a defect in our spiritual self. It's not something that we physically feel necessarily, but we create a spiritual defect in our neshama. But the second, and perhaps much more important, is the fact that we sever our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We come further away from the Kadosh Baruch Hu because of the avera that we've done. And what tshuva does is tshuva fixes both of those problems. First of all, the thing that you did, the avera that you did, the tshuva is part of the tshuva is abstaining from that act, abstination from the act that you have done, promising never to do it again. But the tshuva also peels away at the barrier that you created with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It totally removes that barrier. And that's the point of the kapara process. That's the point of the vidoy. It's saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, I want to restart this relationship that I lost over the year based on what I've done. There are two ways of doing tshuva. I'll give you a mashal. If I go and I would smack you across the face, right? When I was a waiter in a certain camp, after my senior year in high school, I'll never forget this moment. It's probably the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me. Maybe the second most embarrassing. The first thing I'll leave for another time. But the second most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me in my life. So what happened? I was a waiter in camp. I was like waiter in sports staff. So I was waiter during lunch. And there was a guy who was a crazy kid. He was a year older than me, crazy guy. And he thought that I did something wrong to him, which I totally didn't. Totally, it wasn't me, it was somebody else. And he came, he took a cake, and he smashed it in my face in front of the entire lunchroom. Right? Entire lunchroom. I'm not a small guy, and I was very willing to kill this guy right there, but I held myself back because he was so crazy, I didn't know what would be after that, like, you know, how far this would go. So I didn't react, and I left. And it was, you know, totally embarrassing thing for me to have gone through, and something that you'll never forget. So let's say he wanted to make amends with me. And I'm much bigger than him. Let's say he wanted to make amends with me. So there are two ways that he would have gone about. First, he would have said sorry because he doesn't want to get killed by me at a later date, right? That's one type of tshuva. Or the second type of tshuva would be that what? I really feel bad that we severed our relationship, and I really want to make amends. I want to recreate that relationship like it was before he threw the cake at me. And that's obviously a much higher, much better level of tshuva, and something that really HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And that's what we're trying to strive for. But you're only going to be able to restart that connection if you tell the person what you did wrong. A person who just goes and says he's sorry because he doesn't want to get punished by God is a very cheap type of tshuva. But if a person wants to do the real tshuva, it's that I did something wrong, like the little boy. I'm admitting to it, and now I want to recreate the relationship that we really originally had. And that's why the vidui begins. Elokeinu, Elokei Avoteinu, or Ana Tavo Lefanecha Tefilatenu. There's always, there's an Ana, Ana Hashem Chatasi Avisi Pashati. It's a, start with an Ana. Ana is a lashon of beseeching a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Rav Soloveitchik says in his Sefer Al HaTshuva that it starts with an Ana because it's part of the Tefillah process. What's the Tefillah all about? At the end of the day, Tefillah is about creating a relationship between yourself and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, recognizing that you're beholden to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Kapara is all about. That's why it's in the davening, and that's why it's in every place of the davening, because it's restoring that connection. If you take the two vidui, vidui is the same shorosh as hodah, thanks. Because it's all about, vidui is about being beholden. Just like when you thank somebody who's done something for you, you're beholden to them. Vidui is the same thing. I did something wrong, I'm beholden to you to fix up our relationship. And every part of Kapara is all about that fixing up the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you think about it. The Korban, the Ramban says, why does a person bring a Korban? What's a Korban? The Korban is in place of you. Really, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you should take my soul for having done an Avera, for having rebelled against you, but I'm offering up this behemoth, this animal, instead of myself. It's recreating that relationship. Going to, what do we all do? Shana Afka is a little bit uncomfortable with this idea, but it's, you know, usually experienced tomorrow for first time for most Shana Aleph guys. What is that? The mikveh. Right? I used to go to the mikveh every single year since I've been probably six with my father. But guys, I feel like in later years, guys don't go to the mikveh as often. And sometimes their first experience in the mikveh is an interesting one. And the first one is Shana Aleph right before Yom Kippur. Why do we go to the mikveh before Yom Kippur? Because when you go into the mikveh, when you go into the water, you submerge yourself into the water, and for that moment in time when you're submerged, you're like totally beholden to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're in the fetal position. You're very, very, you're very sensitive, and it's a time that you realize that it's something greater than yourself. All those aspects are aspects of tshuva, which we're just trying to recreate and restart that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The vidui is a part of the process of tefillah, so much so that there's a medrash, or Pinkus quotes in a sefer on Yom Kippur. He quotes an interesting medrash. Medrash says that there's actually a havim in a thought that a person cannot do tshuva, cannot do vidui in chutz laaretz. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, or the medrash says in Parashas Ki Tisa, that there's a havim in a thought that you're not able to do tshuva unless you're in times of the Beis HaMikdash. You can't do vidui unless you're in time of the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Medrash goes and says, it's not true. You can always do vidui. But what's the havam mina? Why in the world would the Medrash think that you cannot do vidui unless you're in front of the Beis HaMikdash? So I think what Rav Soloveitchik is saying is a very beautiful idea, is that vidui is all about a relationship. And being in the Beis HaMikdash is the height of the relationship that you could possibly have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So much so that we think, that the Medrash thinks, has a havam mina to think that I could do vidui, I can only do vidui in the Beis HaMikdash when I have that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But comes a Medrash and says, no, vidui is appropriate time for always. This is a time where the Pasuk says, Dir Shashem Behimatso, that we have to go and we have to seek out a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have a few hours before the big day. If we're going to anyway go in 10 times, trying to do vidui to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, trying to do kapara for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, trying to rebuild our relationship, it's really, really, it behooves us to go and think about ourselves. We can't be like that Kayin, we're going and rationalizing away our averes, because we'll never end up rebuilding that relationship. I have a suggestion, possibly. There are 10 times that we're going to do vidui over Yom Kippur. Maybe take 10 instances where you felt that you wronged HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or somebody else, which inherently is anyway an extension to wronging HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But go and take it. So each time there's something new that you're coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with. So it creates a newness, it creates an importance to a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we rationalize things away, we'll never come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll never be the tzaddik that we possibly can. Well, I'm going to end with one idea. There are two people, two very famous Baalei Tshuva. Eliezer ben Dudaya, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which we all famously know, that he did a bad Avera, and he felt really bad about it, and then he said he cried himself to death out of the remorse that he had for the Avera that he did, until famously it was said, Yish misha kuna olama b'sha'achat, that there's somebody that could take and go into Gan Eden in one moment of tshuva. Then you have somebody else called Acher. Acher was Elisha ben Avuya. Right? It was a very, very big Talmud Chacham, but he went off the path and he never came back. Why? Because you know why? The difference between Acher and Elazar ben Dudaya, the two difference between them is one rationalized himself away and the other didn't. One said that I can't do tshuva because I heard Me'achori Apargat, I heard in Shamayim that Elazar ben Dudaya is never going to come, is never going to be accepted as tshuva, or because his mother didn't aveir, or his father didn't teach him Torah Lishma. If a person goes and rationalizes away all of his aveiros, he's never going to rebuild that relationship. So it's incumbent upon us a few hours before left that we can really look at ourselves and think to ourselves, how can I rebuild that relationship? And it starts with understanding that, that what you did wrong or what we did wrong in order to repair that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should be zocha in the next few hours that we have left to go and look at ourselves, introspect into ourselves, see what we did wrong so we could come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Have a good day.